It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. We are joined by the Lakeville Journal every Thursday morning. We take a look at some of the stories that the Lakeville Journal is publicizing this week. Not only that, but we also include some of the stories from the Millerton News. And I know we have Janet Manko on the line. Right, Janet?
Right. Good morning.
Good morning. And we have John and we have Pat at the official residence of the Lakeville Journal. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ah, that's true. Wow. That was perfect. That was unison.
They even answered in unison. That is really good.
That's really great.
Right. We've never had that.
Yeah.
Is it Pat or Patrick?
Patrick, please.
Okay, well, I'll call you Patrick from now on, not Pat. Could be Pat Nixon I was talking to. That's right. All right.
Anyway, he answered in unison, even though you called him Pat.
That's exactly right. Because he's a well-dressed guy.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the front page of the Lakeville Journal. Of course, lots of color on the front page from the special banner for celebrating Easter. And we're going to start off, though, before talking about the plunge. This is a problem that just hasn't gone away yet for Kent, and that is the Scaticook recognition issue resurfacing in Washington, D.C. Who wants to handle that story?
I'll take it. In doing some background on this, I plowed through the back issues on the online thing at the Scoville Library, and I realized I haven't really written about this since 2005.
Yeah.
And so it's important to remember that there are two Scaticook groups, and one is the Scaticook Indian tribe, which is more or less based in Kent, and that's the group that's filed the petition here. And the other group is the Scaticook Tribal Nation, which is down, its office is down in Derby. And I checked on their website, and I didn't see any reference to this at all. So I don't know if they're going to chime in. I suspect they will. But this gets everybody alarmed, and it will take a lot of time to resolve, and I confidently predict long, lengthy legal proceedings.
Yeah, you're right. There's going to be a lot of, and there's going to be a lot of town money spent on it, and there's already been a lot of town money in Kent spent on this over the years, and it will continue because it's a quandary. When Connecticut recognizes something and the federal government kind of did but then backed off, it sets the tune for lawyers to really drag it out, and I hate to say this, but make a lot of money at everybody's expense, so we'll have to see what happens with it. I want to go down now to the story on the Housatonic Meadows tree cutting. There's a bill now that's been brought up to oversee the work for the from the Department of Environmental Protection. John, we'll let you handle that one.
Thank you. This story has really serves to really update our readers on where this this issue stands. As you know, there was a lot of activity over the winter in November, December, and January, and then it sort of fell into public hearing stage. But meantime, Craig Miner, along with Marie Horn, have put this legislation into the hopper, and tomorrow scheduled a meeting between DEEP and the Environment Committee in the Senate to work out more details on the language. And then also it's going to have to be sort of ironed out in terms of the cost of such a bill. But it's the thing has two big tracks. One is the legislative push to sort of hope that this doesn't happen again like this. And then secondly, it's got to be remediated over there. And that group, the Housatonic Meadows Preservation Action, is a very strong and dedicated group of folks who are going to work with DEEP to get it remediated as best as possible. So it's really going to keep on happening until, I guess, the legislature ends in May. I think it's May 4th. So we're going to keep our eye on it.
You know, John, what's interesting about the bill is that it calls for some things that are just common sense, which is consulting with arborists before removing trees. Also, informing the public and having a plan what you're going to do after you remove the trees. I mean, that's what's interesting about this bill. It seems to be common sense, but you just never know how things are going to go through through the House. You just don't.
Right.
All right, we're going to move on to a story that Patrick did, and that is, and what's funny about the story, Patrick, which isn't really funny, in New York State, they had a budget hearing, I think it was for either Millard or Pine Plains, and four people showed up. And Region 1, the $16 million regional school budget, goes to the voters, and no voters showed up at that meeting.
Yeah, that didn't surprise me, because no. I haven't heard... Leading up to that hearing, I hadn't heard any rumblings at all. And but it does surprise me in a larger sense, because the words 16 million ought to at least raise an eyebrow or two. And people would, I thought, at least would tune in to see what it was about. But no, I guess people have just accepted that's the way it is.
Well, you know, and the budget at $16 million includes for the high school. This is what's interesting when you take a look at the numbers. The high school budget is about $8.4 million. Pupil services, that's also including special education, comes in at $6.6 million. And the regional service center, which is the administrative wing, that budget comes in at a little over $1.5 million. So the budget is made up of three distinct things. And $16 million is a lot of money, but I think nowadays... People are used now, especially with inflation, high costs are high costs, and they just kind of...
But also, the apathy needs work.
It's always been there, even when the budgets were being debated, people didn't show up at these meetings. But let's go to the taking the plunge. The Hotchkiss students held their polar plunge at Lake Winnanskapamuck, and once again, the Jay and Lloyd Fund, and I think another fund also raised money from that.
That came over the wire late Sunday, and I said, "Gee, nobody told us." And they said, "Yeah, that was on purpose." Because Hotchkiss is still maintaining a pretty stringent COVID protocol, although gathering outside and jumping in a lake seems, well, anyway, I didn't quite follow the logic of that, but anyway, they did send some nice photos, and it got me off the hook for... not having to
go to the lake.
Explain to people why I'm not going to jump in the lake.
Right, exactly.
All right. I want to move from jumping in the lake to the Great Mountain Forest, witch hazel harvesting. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, this is one of those stories that I like falls into the category of did you know? And a lot of people have had experience, of course, through life with witch hazel, small amounts of it, or use it. Your parents did it all the time. Anyway, this topic is sort of full of lots of little mysteries. Where does it come from? You know, how is it harvested? And the audience at this talk up at the Hunt Library was full of questions that were the curiosities were simply they. They didn't know why a little use of witch hazel on a bee sting worked. How did that work to make it feel better and make it heal faster? But there are a few other interesting things that fell out of the talk, one of which is that, in fact, witch hazel is harvested right here in our backyard, and the other one is that 90% of the world's witch hazel extract comes from Connecticut. And it's been that way for a very long time.
And just so you know, I was going to weigh in and say that I was waiting, but you trumped me. So
okay. All sorry right. to trump you.
That's okay. It happens.
Years ago, Patrick, when I was much younger and much more adventurous, I would always go out and do a live broadcast from the opening of fishing season at Lakeville Lake. I remember the first year I did it, it was a cloudy morning, and all the boats went out. They were lined up, and they went out, and about 40 minutes away, it was just a downpour, and all the boats turned around and came in, and it looked like Normandy. Once again, though, a chilly, wet start to the fishing season, and for someone like you, this is a big day.
Well,
not really.
It is, but it isn't, because the state has eliminated a closed trout season. So opening day is now something that has no legal force whatsoever.
Really?
So at the Grove in Lakeville and also down in Riverton on the Farmington, they had their opening day fishing derby. So they've maintained these traditions. I don't know how long that'll go on. I suspect for a while. Anyway, I got over there and it was about 7 o'clock, just in time to see this young lady catching fish right and left. She seemed to have the magic touch, and then we all went inside where it was warm. And like I said, we all talked about how much better it was in the old days.
Well, you're right, because back then when we started Q103, we were in the railroad station, okay? And the reason I did it that one year is because the cars with trailers with boats were lined up from the entrance to Lakeville Lake at 5 o'clock in the morning past the radio station at that time and on the run. And I said, wow, this is really, really a big event back then. It really was.
Well, it was terribly exciting. The anticipation was, you also, if you did fish, some people, opening day in New York State, was it earlier than Connecticut, Patrick? I don't remember, but I just remember having to focus on that. And it was definitely something to look forward to. And when there's something to look forward to, there's a reason to have a party.
All right, we're going to go on to some other stories here, and that is I want to start off with the public forum on cannabis options for North Canaan has been scheduled for May. If any town needs more money from cannabis, it's probably North Canaan. Who wants to comment on that story?
Well, I'll chime in here. I think, as we know, right across the border in Massachusetts, there is cannabis available in retail outlets, and I think North Canaan is just taking an advanced look at what would the options be for the town if someone wanted to either propose a retail operation or to grow in the town, grow some sort of product in the town. And so they're planning a really opening it up to the public, but I think Charlie Perotti is probably also thinking through what his options might be ahead of time to either put a moratorium or just sort of ban it outright. I think they just want to get more public input.
Yeah, but it's interesting because I think the public input that will come from the people that want it, especially taxpayers, is that the potential is there, seeing as, once again, their regional budget went up $700,000 this year to bring in more money. So it'll be interesting to watch what the public actually does say at that meeting. And then we can move over to Cornwall. They face their budgets with a public hearing coming up on the 22nd.
Right, and I actually had an opportunity to speak with the first selectman yesterday, Gordon Ridgway, and in this story by Leela, he really talks about keeping your powder dry because they foresee, some tough times ahead. Throughout all the towns, inflation is beginning to show up. One of the interesting notes in this story is that Cornwall has a what you would call a rainy day fund of more than $2 million, and that seemed like a pretty good number. So I guess he means it when he says he's going to keep his powder dry. But yes, I think Leela's done a nice job of really categorizing the spending there and how they're going to sort of tackle it.
You know, at that same meeting, the selectmen voted to take on New Vance Health. They support Sharon Hospital, and they're against the reductions.
Right. Well, one of the big points that I know Cornwall envisions is that we need to work together as a community of towns, and I think that kind of a service is something that they believe is, has to be there. So that's all I know about it at this point, but you make a very good point.
All right, on to the opinion pages now, and Janet will bring you in. A notable transition.
That's right. You know, we have been going through this transition for several months now, if our readers may remember. And, you know, we've had some fits and starts, but now it seems as if it's taken, and we are very happy to welcome John Costin, who you've been listening to, as the editor of the Lakeville Journal, and to thank Cynthia Hoxwender, our former executive editor and now editor of Compass Arts and Entertainment, for sticking with us and going through these months and keeping our papers going. And so give this a read and pay attention to us. All the contact information is here to reach any of us, and that's John or Patrick as managing editor, or me or Cynthia at Compass, and we are here to reflect our communities the way you would like them to be seen.
All right, lots of letters. It's funny because you've got a letter by Ron Santos, the doctor who has the emergency center, talking about the emergency department not closing. And I had a conversation with Mark Herkel a couple of weeks about that, and we split hairs on that. What the emergency room is not closing, what they are planning a major shift on, is the extraordinary care that happens in the emergency room. That is what is going to, is what is going to be affected. The emergency room will stay there, but the extra care that is done is that is where the changes are going to come. So that's an interesting letter.
It is an interesting letter. Give it a read and contact Dr. Santos with more questions if you like. And you know, part of that I think is a difference in the way emergency departments are defined now. There's been so much change in healthcare as far as how care is delivered and through what channels. So it may be open, but it will not look the way it did 20 years ago.
No, because the emergency department contains the other department. You know,
For example, we actually know somebody. This is definitely worth talking about, because we know someone who was in the emergency room, but then had to go someplace else for the care that he needed. So that's the complication.
Intensive care is different than just the emergency room. Intensive care
totally.
is
totally.
And that is the thing that is up there to be affected as well. And this is where I love the letters to the editor more than anything. You've got a letter that disagrees with the writer, and another one out of the blue on European energy independence, a dream or reality. But there's the give and take that happens with letters to the editor.
Right. We have so many interesting readers, and we'd love to have their voices reflected on this page. And so we thank Dalibor Anchevsky for talking about what's happening in Ukraine and Europe, because know he's an expert and comes from there now in West Cornwall and sharing his knowledge. And so Gretchen Gordon, the longtime periodic writer on this page, she's rebutting points made by Mark Godburn, which has been happening the past couple weeks. And so we thank her for that. And Peggy Fricaro, on how to end COVID, also an expert in infection prevention and control, and really straightforward, to the point, give that a read.
When I hear Peggy Fricaro, I think of her parents. They ran the diner in Canaan.
That's right. I talked to all the letter writers, as you know, and when I talked to her, she said, you know, I go by Margaret, but I think everybody there knows me as Peggy, so let's do Peggy.
All right, so there's that. And this is an interesting thing, and turning back the pages, we only have a few seconds, I want to go into it. Back 25 years ago, the plan to change the face of Route 44 was in the works. Well, of course, we all know that it wasn't completed until, what, about 5 years ago?
That's right. Well, you know, they didn't give a timeline. They just said, well, let's start.
All right. And, of course, you've got the long view about Ukraine and The Mourning for Life by Lonnie Carter.
Yes. Both our columns this week are on Ukraine and thinking about what is happening there. And so, yeah, Tom Shachman has a family history there and talks about some of the history that still is very relevant to what's happening in Ukraine today. So give that a read. And Lonnie Carter, also direct knowledge of lots of history, and really glad we could pair these two, who actually taught together at one point.
All right, and who's going to handle Compass this week?
Well, I'm happy to. I won't be as eloquent as Cynthia, however, but the stories are great. So we have from Caitlin Lyle a review of The Batman, and so she is a big fan of Marvel movies and really gives a great view of, you know, why you should go and see this movie. And we have Lynn Kircher on Kinetic Sculpture by Tim Prentice and David Colbert from Cornwall. They've been doing this for decades, creating kinetic sculpture together. And so right now they have given a sculpture to the high school, Housatonic Valley Regional High School, and it's great that'll be there for, you know, anyone who's experienced these kinetic sculptures. They're just, you know, meditative almost. You know, you look up and they just move no matter where they are, so they're fantastic. And we have Ed Furman on streaming, which is always great. And so he talks about shows that should have won Emmys, in his opinion, but did not. So give that a read and see if you agree with him, if you've seen them. If you haven't seen them, these are great ones to watch. Mayor of Easttown, you know, great series he talks about in depth, and certainly he believes it should have won an Emmy. The Night of, and Empire Falls. So, yeah, read about those. He is really good at presenting them and telling you why you should watch them. And, of course, we have a calendar. Things are happening. Take a look there and get out and do something.
All right. We just touch on some of the stories you'll find, the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News. It's available online at tricornernews.com. Also available for home delivery and pickup at various locations throughout the region. Folks, have a great weekend. Have a happy Easter, and we'll speak to you all next week.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you.
This week in the Lakeville Journal, once again, available at tricornernews.com.